This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Many black churches have been under attack. According to the Center for Democratic Renewal, 80 mostly rural, historically black and multiracial churches have been firebombed, burned, or vandalized since January of 1990. 28 of those attacks occurred since January of this year. My guest, Reverend Dennis Lawson, is the pastor of a small church in Columbia, Tennessee, that was firebombed in January of 1995. The Canaan AME Church has a congregation of about 100 people in a rural area of Tennessee that is about 25% African American. Reverend Lawson lives in Nashville, which is about an hour from Columbia. Yesterday, he was in Washington to attend a breakfast with President Clinton on the burning of black churches. After the breakfast, I spoke with Reverend Lawson about the impact of the firebombing on his community. First, I asked him to describe what happened.
My church was one of three, two churches and a tavern that was firebombed on that evening. It started out, there were three gentlemen who did the firebombing, adult males, who started with a tavern. And from the tavern, they traveled approximately 15 miles to the Friendship Baptist Church, where they erected a cross and started it to burn, and then hurled Molotov cocktails into the main sanctuary of the church. And from there, they traveled approximately another 15 miles to my church, in which they did the same thing, erected the cross and hurled the Molotov cocktails into the building. Fortunately for my congregation, the firebombs entered through the lower auditorium of the building, and while it destroyed much of the kitchen area, it did not destroy the main sanctuary of the church, the main church offices, and so have you. But there was quite a bit of damage done to the lower auditorium in the kitchen area. But the amazing thing in our situation is that once the flames intensified, they managed to either melt or cause the water lines to erupt, and the flames were extinguished. I think of it as, the angels of Satan starting the fire, and before the bottles were hurled, God has dispatched his own band of firefighters to handle the situation. So while we did have damage done to the building, it wasn't the type of damage that we've seen in many of the churches in which they lost everything.
Have you been able to use the church?
Yes. It did not prevent us from, carrying on a weekly services like we normally do. It did prevent us for 2 to 3 months from using the kitchen area until it had been repaired, and so have you. But the rest of the building was usable.
Now, you say that a cross was erected outside of the church.
Yes.
Just before it was firebombed. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that the people who were the arsonists were members of the Ku Klux Klan?
We can't say. And in repeating what the FBI and the state attorney general and district attorney stated, that they believe that the three were, in their terms, were too dumb to be a part of an organized group. They believe that these individuals acted just among themselves. So we can't say that it was the Ku Klux Klan or any other group. We do know that there were some very racial explicit materials circulated through the mail to the local fire marshal. However, we were not privy to that information because the courts felt that it was so derogatory that it could cause quite a bit of confusion if the contents of that letter was released. But we do know, and the three have admitted that in their case, it was simple racism.
Have they stood trial yet?
They pleaded guilty. So they avoided trial, but they have been sentenced, and they are now serving federal time.
Mm-hmm. What was your reaction when you found out that your church had been firebombed?
Devastated. As a matter of fact, members of my congregation did not know the church had been firebombed because the water system had put the fire out. They were consoling members of the Friendship Baptist Church at the time, only to discover hours later that the church had been firebombed. But it was quite devastating. And for the first few days, there was quite a bit of alarm, quite a bit of fear. We did not know if I was a target or any particular individual within the congregation was a target. Therefore, it meant that I had to have traveling companions because the city of Columbia is approximately an hour drive from Nashville. It meant that someone had to be with me for the first few days, that I would have to notify individuals in Nashville when I left Nashville, when I arrived in Columbia, and when I left Columbia and to return. It caused quite a bit of fear within our children. I service a small congregation, but 50% of the congregation are children. So we had to be particularly concerned about the children. My son in particularly, like others, were having problems sleeping. If I was out of the house, he just could not be content until he knew that I had safely returned. And that fear was throughout the congregation where the children were concerned.
Do you have any new security measures that you're using either at your church or personal security measures?
Yes. We were forced to have to install electronic alarms. Now, we've got a system in place now that if there is even window breakage, the alarms will automatically sound if there's fire damage or anything. Also, for me personally, it meant that I had to go out and purchase a cell phone and so have you. So I have to keep that with me at all times so that I can keep, you know, communication with others as I move around. There have been, you know, some little strange things occurring, and I can't say that it's connected or not. For instance, oftentimes I'm finding that my car has been keyed and, you know, new scratches are appearing constantly. And again, I don't know if it's connected, but we do have to take certain precautions.
Do you look at the attack on your church as an isolated incident, you know, three stupid, hate-filled people attacking the church? Or do you see it as a part of a larger pattern of hatred in your community now?
Well, I think it's a pattern in terms of hatred, not necessarily isolated to that community, but across the nation. There is no positive proof that there's any type of organized conspiracy. However, there are those of us believe that there could exist perhaps a loose conspiracy of sense. We know that there have been certain patterns that have been followed in several of these firebombing. They're generally done late at night, usually between the hours of 11 and 2 to 3 a.m. They're done under the cover of darkness. The churches have pretty much all been located in remote areas, extremely rural areas where you have to know where they are to know that they are there. It's not a situation where you can just randomly come upon these places. You've got to pretty much know where you are. In many of the incidents, we've seen three to four burnings at a time, all within hours of each other in the same communities. So whether there is a conspiracy or not, we do know that there are many, many similarities.
Reverend, would you describe your church and the community that it serves?
Well, my church, it's a small congregation in number. However, it's a great church in terms of its heart and the spirit of the church. It's large from a spiritual aspect. And I think the flavor that is represented within my congregation is something that's felt throughout the entire community in which these churches are located. As a fact, the entire county stood steadfast and supported us, both congregations, when this occurred. And they made it clear to people in that community, we are embarrassed by these acts, and we will not allow such things to take place in this community. And they showed their concerns by the manner in which they came to our aid, with the Friendship Baptist Church sustaining the greater amount of damage, and it was done to their main sanctuary. The community across racial lines and ethnic backgrounds all came together and worked 24 hours a day, starting immediately to refurbish and to repair the damage that was done. This occurred on a Sunday evening, late Sunday evening, and by Sunday morning of the next week, they were back in the sanctuary because the community just worked around the clock to do it.
How quickly were the three suspects apprehended?
They were apprehended approximately 4 to 5 days after the firebombings occurred.
How do you feel the firebombing of your church has been dealt with by the FBI and by local law enforcement officials?
Well, in our case, I feel very good about the way that they dealt with us. I know that there are those who feel that they themselves are being targeted and they're being treated unfairly in these investigations. But I cannot say that that occurred in our situation. I thought that the FBI and the local law enforcement made a tremendous effort to be of assistance to us. There was never any intimidation or anything of that nature. And I don't know if that was because the arrests were made so quickly or not, but their support was tremendous.
So you're pleased with the way things have gone in your case?
Yes.
My guest is Reverend Dennis Lawson. His church was firebombed in January of 1995. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Reverend Dennis Lawson. He's the pastor of a church in rural Tennessee that was firebombed last year. No, you came of age during the Civil Rights Movement?
Yes.
Where did you grow up?
Roxboro, North Carolina, a little city outside of Durham.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember there being any attacks on churches when you were young?
Well, I remember, you know, watching television and seeing the bombings in Alabama and so have you. I was a product of integration. I was placed in an all-white school before the integration laws of the 60s were even passed. So I lived much of what a number of people have witnessed on TV when, you know, they saw the integration of schools in Arkansas and Mississippi and other areas. I lived that. But even living that and watching the firebombs that occurred in the 60s as a child did little to prepare me for what happened a year and a half ago. It was just unthinkable that something like that would occur today. But as we see, it did.
What impact did it have on you as a child when you heard, for instance, about the bombing of the church in Birmingham, in which four 14-year-old girls were killed?
Well, it was a very frightful period for me as a child because, as we know, during the 60s, many of the pastors of churches were targeted, and I grew up in a pastor's household, a family of ministers. So there was always a threat hanging over the household. I can remember the adults going armed and so have you when they traveled because of this. And to top it off, having been placed in a non-integrated school didn't help matters, but there were things that we had to do, and, you know, I just happened to be part of that environment at the time. But it's quite interesting because in the 70s, as a college student, I had the opportunity to go to school, undergraduate school, with the brother of one of those four young girls that were killed in Birmingham in 63.
Wow.
And even at that time, you could still see the pain and the hurt in him that of the manner in which his sister had died. And even at that, it still would not occur to me that years later, I would be faced with the same situation again. As a matter of fact, approximately 6 weeks before the firebombing occurred, my family and I were in Birmingham, Alabama, in which we had the opportunity to tour the Civil Rights Museum there. And there we saw the buses that had been firebombed and so have you during the 60s on display. And still, you know, after seeing all of this, it just does not prepare you when it occurs.
Did the Civil Rights Movement have anything to do with you becoming a pastor?
No. I guess in my case, I was told from the day of my birth that I would eventually be a minister. As a matter of fact, it's the one thing I wanted less to do with. But as we see, it's the one thing that I've had to do. It's one of those things that it's hard to explain unless you've actually had to deal with it and go through it yourself. I've always heard ministers talk about that special calling that they received. And you would wonder about, have these people lost their minds or what have you? But I know now that it's very true, but it's one of those things that you can't really explain to those who've not experienced it. I can say that had I remained in North Carolina in the environment I grew up in, it's a real possibility that I could have gone into the ministry never knowing that I was actually intended to do so. But with me leaving home, going to Nashville to school and having a time to be away from that environment for a while assured me that what was going on with me was very real.
So it sounds like you were called both by God and family.
Oh, yes.
What have your sermons been like since the church was bombed?
From the pulpit, we've tried to teach positivism and to look for the positive aspects in life. We do realize that there's pain all around, and we deal with that pain. But we teach the people that if you really look through or try to see yourself through the pain, then you will realize that you've got something to rejoice for. It has been difficult, I will say, to prepare sermons and to meditate and study as I need to during this period, because this has so occupied much of my time for the last year and a half. So it's been somewhat difficult to prepare sermons. But again, if one has been truly called to do this type of service, and that individual used the talents that he or she has been given by God, then they can make a way to do things. As a matter of fact, one of the things that has helped me the most is I work out. I try to work out in the health club 2 to 3 times a week on an average. And that has helped tremendously, because instead of displaying anger and frustration publicly, I can go to the gym and, you know, run 3 or 4 miles and lift some weights and so have you. So the physical exercise has really worked hand in hand with the ministry as of late.
That's very interesting. Has your church been rebuilt, the parts that were destroyed, the kitchen?
Yes, we were able to make the repairs. And as a matter of fact, most of the repairs were completed within 3 to 4 months after the firebombing.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay. And if I may just make one statement.
Please.
I don't know who can hear this broadcast or who will hear this broadcast, but we do want to make it very clear to those individuals who may take it upon themselves to do these types of crimes that while they may destroy buildings, they cannot destroy the church, because the church is within the people. And out of the ruins of ashes, we're seeing new temples and new churches springing up. So I think they need to know crystal clearly that they cannot destroy God's church.
Dennis Lawson is the pastor of the Canaan AME Church in Columbia, Tennessee. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.